So we just had Lisa in talking about the wastewater issue, and the first thing on your email here is the mayor apologising for Raglan wastewater issues, October 27th.
Yeah, this is a story which is both on their website and on their Facebook page and on Raglan 23. So I think they all say much the same.
It would be on ours too, I think, except I was off sick yesterday. So, but we have we got the councillor in person this morning to talk about it, and more importantly, the hui that's happening. Thursday evening.
Yep.
Yeah, 6 o'clock at the Stewart Street Church Hall. And all the relevant, just it sounds like all the relevant people will be in the room with the council CEO, the head of the people from Water Care, the head of the Waters Governance Board.
All the people who didn't want to turn up to a meeting and cancelled the meeting and online and are now turning up in person.
What meeting was that?
It's the monthly meeting talking about the wastewater treatment.
Oh, okay.
Which is apparently not making any progress, and therefore they're not having a meeting.
Because there's nothing to discuss. All right, so that's a side, which is related, but are we ready to move on to that one? Because we should talk about that too. We know there's a bug, and we know things went wrong, but it's kind of like, but how did that happen? And talking with Lisa, I'm wondering if it's human error behind the bug on the computer system.
Well, they had the problem twice with their computer programming, and they've not detailed what that is. And they did say that they thought they'd fixed it, but they haven't said on either occasion how they fixed it or how it went wrong exactly. So
on Thursday night, yeah, on Thursday night they should be able to answer that. I hope they'll be able to, because there'll be a lot of groans and grumbling if they can't in the room.
It'd be good if they came along and showed what computer algorithm or whatever they're using and what they've done to fix it.
I know they have to put in, like, they have to put in the dates and the tide times into the system. So this is purely speculation on my part. I'm wondering if they put them in wrong, which is why it happened twice.
Okay, it's easy to muddle them up, because I know I've done it. I managed to get 2022 muddled up with 2023, and it makes quite a difference.
Maybe that's what they did, yeah. And of course, what it means is that it could keep happening. But they'll be looking for it this time, I'm sure. But it's probably why it happened again just a couple of weeks later. All right, so we know that's happening. The mayor's apologised. All the real answers are going to come hopefully on Thursday night. And moving to the next thing, John, which
well,
you said
it still puzzles me because, as I say,
oh, you want to talk about
it
more.
Once, but I didn't do it twice. They seem to have done it twice. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what explanation they've got. It's also going to be interesting to see whether the mayor's assurance that it's all been clean water, or relatively clean water, because it's gone through an ultraviolet disinfection system, whether that's actually true, because one of the statements that they've made recently is that they're breaching their resource consent because their water has too much sediment in it, and therefore the ultraviolet system can't work properly because the ultraviolet light can't get through all that sediment.
Can you even answer that question, though? Like, the water that went out last time on the incoming tide, what quality was it actually?
Yes.
Can we answer that question?
We can ask that question. We can't answer it because, as I say, it's been an ongoing issue.
Can anybody answer it, though? That's my question. Posed the question, and I'm like, well, I'd like to know, yes, but actually, is it possible to ever find out?
Yeah, but I'm not sure whether they only find out when they test it or whether they do regular sampling and it comes up on their samples and says, hey, we're failing the resource consent at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, and another question too. Lisa's hoping there's to be someone there from the Waikato Regional Council. They're likely to want to say nothing because they've got an investigation going on at the moment. But I noticed that Roger Gallagher on the Raglan 23 website has asked them the question, the Regional Council. Well, no, he's asked District Council the question, but pointed out that Regional Council a few years ago was saying they weren't too happy with what had been happening out here.
Yeah, that was his headline, Time for Back to the Future, if you scan down the email I just sent you. Roger reminded us that they had been fined $56,000 for spilling sewage into the harbour.
Yeah.
And was questioning whether that was going to happen again.
Yeah, and the question is, because of what's happened in the past, is Regional Council going to be more heavy-handed in their punishment, if there's to be a punishment, than they might have otherwise? I guess that's a question, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the statement he's outlined in red on his Facebook, on his webpage, is saying that the more often it happens, the more culpable they get found, because you can't keep saying, oh, I've made a mistake.
Yeah, so in fact, here's the quote from Brent Sinclair from the Regional Council saying, it is concerning that there is a growing number of formal enforcement actions that have been taken against your district council for breaches of the Resource Management Act. Each action contributes to the council's history of non-compliance. We're obliged to take this history into account each time a further breach is identified. That's bureaucrat speak for, that's quite, that's a heavy statement for a bureaucrat, isn't it?
We've got our eye on you and you can't keep doing this.
So yep. That's from about 5 years ago, that comment, I think, roughly, very roughly 5 years ago. Oh, 2016. Yeah. Okay, so that's...
So, yeah, we've got this meeting on Thursday and we'll hopefully find out more then.
Yeah. And then, but the aside you made before about the fact that the Water Governance Board is not having its meeting, they've cancelled the meeting?
Yep. Has to be said that Acting Chair of the Community Board, Chris, sent them a fairly snotty letter or email saying, you know, it's not the time to be doing it when we've got leaks in the harbour or pumping in the harbour at the wrong time. And they said, oh, we haven't got anything more to say about that. So it's interesting that only a week or so after saying that, they're now actually coming along en masse to Raglan rather than doing it online.
What, the whole board?
Well, the chair who would have been on that video meeting, as far as I can see, are coming to the church hall on Thursday evening.
Well, that's good. It's a sign that they're taking it seriously.
Well, they've been made to by somebody, so maybe the mayor's cracked the whip and said, hey, we can't keep making excuses and not turning up.
Yeah, or maybe even, I mean, they're getting the message left, right and centre. Chris's, as you described it, snotty email. Probably also...
And regional council as well. So, and one of the things they need to show to regional council is that they've kept people informed, and that's one of the criticisms, that they were really quite slow to put up those signs saying there might be a danger.
Well, I guess, yeah, okay, all right. I was just start to imagine the process of how the signs get put up, but let's not worry about that too much.
Sustainability on the list next.
No, I wanted to segue to the fact that you're saying that, you're saying this off the air or on the air, that the negotiations for with the landowner of the piece of land that might be used for the land-based wastewater treatment have not gone, don't seem to be going that well, far as we can tell.
That's why there's been no progress, because for several meetings now they've just kept saying the same thing. We're trying to agree on a memorandum of understanding with the landowner. They never specify who the landowner is, but as far as I understand it, it's David Peacock's Raglan Land Company.
So based on all our prejudices, he's probably the hardest negotiator that they could have chosen. Well, certainly one of the hardest they could have chosen from our community, who would have been, who knows, he would definitely had things he wanted out of it. And,
he's certainly a good negotiator, because I worked with him on Winery Reserve Committee for several years, and he was there mainly because he was great at selling cattle at good prices. So he was able to get a good bargain for the Winery Reserve. Put money into the Winery Reserve from the cattle sales that were made.
Yeah, so that was a committee that got absorbed by the Coastal Reserves Committee that got disbanded by the previous mayor, and now...
And which still doesn't function and was supposed to have an annual meeting, and still we seem to be missing out on even that.
Well, we had an annual meeting last year. Was it last year?
Yes, but we should be due one about now as well. So
yeah, not there were actually... Anything. Did you notice at the last community board meeting there were murmurings from, I think it was Tony Ouston, about the end result of all that is that it really is the council staff are in control of what happens, which they should be in control of a lot of stuff. Like, I don't want to be too paranoid about it, but the lack of local input is pretty stark now.
Yeah, well, it worries me that the councillors are accepting that council staff run things, because I also asked our councillor Lisa, which the council is going to do about the Ombudsman's report on not holding secret workshops. And she said, oh, refer that to staff. So it seems to me that that's a decision that councillors ought to be making, but there seems to be that perception amongst councillors that it's not their job to decide on things like that, it's staff's job.
Or is that because she wants the technical advice from the staff before she says anything?
Could be, but she didn't say that. I would have thought she would have said, oh, I've gone to staff, I'll come back to you when I've got their technical answer. But
maybe she gets so many emails from you, John, that she hasn't got time to answer them all properly.
Very rarely she gets emails from me.
Okay.
Usually she just sees what I put out to everybody else. But
Okay. You keep jumping us around.
Yes.
Where were we?
We've got round, or at least I think we've got round, talking about the committee that Lisa set up on sustainability and wellbeing.
Are we? I didn't realise that's where we were. What have you got, John?
It depends whether you've been clicking down the email that I sent you 5 minutes ago. And so there was a meeting of that committee. Oh, no, there is a meeting of that committee tomorrow.
Yes.
And there's a few things on the agenda there that I thought were interesting. One of them was that it says Raglan Naturally has recently organised two community workshops to connect with local organisations and groups and understand what the community priorities are and how Raglan Naturally can support those.
So I was at one of those.
Okay, so they do exist, right?
Yes, was that your first question? Did they really happen? One was with community groups, and so there was like the community house and the arts centre and the boat, the fishing club and the surf. Was the surf club there? I'm not sure. There were many, many organisations. I can't even remember them all. The maybe from the DMO, the Destination Management Organisation, from the museum, lots and lots and lots. So I can't remember them all. And they also had another one that was related to sport, and the sports clubs were invited.
Okay, because it seems from the outside that we're hearing very little about Raglan Naturally. They've got a few people working for them, and yet the amount that they're producing that comes out seems to be minimal. And I noticed even on further on in the sustainability committee agenda, they were saying they hadn't heard from them about the climate change issue and what, because quite a number of organisations had put in ideas about what the council ought to be doing on climate change, and we'll get round to that in a minute or two.
Yeah.
But Raglan Naturally was one of those that hadn't responded. So it's interesting now that they are having meetings, but did you get any impression of what's going to come out of them or when?
What came out of that one was that we broke into groups interested in key areas and had a chat, and the groups were going to do things, not Raglan Naturally, but the groups.
The aim is to organise the community rather than have it all done for us. But so it's maybe waiting.
I mean, you're not the only person who's made that comment, but I don't know what the answer to the question is.
Because you don't seem to have talked to anybody about Raglan Naturally for several months now, am I right?
Oh, longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much longer.
Maybe that's to go on your list of things to do.
Yeah,
and
although
find out what's going on.
Craig did interview the Community Connect Coordinator. I've mangled that title for that job.
Maybe that shows how little awareness we've got of what Raglan Naturally is doing at the moment.
To be fair, I could do that quite easily. I could mangle titles, names quite easily.
And
I'm even scared to say the person's name because I'm worried I'm going to get it wrong. But there is a person, Craig, that interviewed them.
Somebody with Raglan Naturally, whose title we probably wouldn't understand anyway. Yes,
well,
that's one issue.
We might understand it if we knew what it was, John.
So I think we've sort of done that issue to death almost.
Yep.
Maybe move on and talk about what I think is the most interesting thing on the agenda tomorrow, which is a climate response and resilience strategy, 2023 to 2027. So she's looking at 4 years of what council might do with a one page which shows a list of actions for each year. And listed in the actions for 2024, so it's the coming year, is adaptation planning. So that's looking at how we might cope with more storms and rising sea levels and all that sort of thing. Climate action mapping, which I'm not too sure what that is, but I think that's related to the other one. So it's suggesting that we need to know where the problems might be. Another one is to investigate biodiverse berms. So that's, I think, another word for saying we cut the grass less often. and we actually allow things to grow there, and we don't spend lots of fossil fuel cutting grass when we don't need to.
Or pretty flowers. There was the bank beside where the Monaco Road intersection is on the main road. I walk past there, all the time. And when spring arrives, it's just a riot of flowers, and it smells really nice. And then one day you turn up, and the council mower's been through and just destroyed it. And it's a little bit heartbreaking every year that they do that. Yeah. So that, yeah, if they could stop doing that when the flowers are out, that would be a nice move.
Yeah, because to stop coursework, weeds growing like gorse and such like, you do need to cut it from time to time, but probably only every 6 months or so. So if they reduce their mowing on areas like that to every 6 months, it would look a lot better and
well,
be
it might,
much
might
better.
Well, it might be 6 months, but it just depends on the timing, because no doubt they're going around the whole district, and it's just whatever time they get to your area. But we've got caught up in a very minor detail again.
Yeah, I was just going through a list of what they're proposing to do next year.
So this about this climate response and resilience strategy is all about is about resilient preparation, coping with climate change.
Yes, well, not only coping with climate change, but also trying to reduce it. So
so that's the area. Like my constant criticism of our government, our councils, and everybody everywhere is that yes, we're talking about we know climate change is we've accepted it's real now. We need to prepare for the bad effects of it, but what are we doing to stop it? That's what I want to know. And councils have been slow. That's in the too hard basket, isn't it, John?
Well, they're going very slowly on it because, I think probably they do regard it as certainly very hard.
There's going to be a lot of people object to anything they do, because what they could do is regulate activities, which is the council's job in our area. But as soon as they go to do that, there's going to be some quite powerful people get very annoyed.
Well, they could also set a good example, because I've mentioned the cattle sales on Wainui Reserve, and it certainly made money for the reserve, but they have cut the numbers there, and they haven't got David Peacock doing the sales anymore. I've never seen any figures recently of how much they are making out of it. One of the major emitters from the council itself is the Wainui Reserve and the cattle on it.
Yeah.
And that they could, it was set up as a model farm. It seems to me one of the models it could now show the way on is how to make a profitable farm without using cattle.
Or how to do regenerative farming.
Yeah, well. Either way, or maybe even split the farm in half and do half and half. But yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
140 hectares.
There's lots of possibilities. But I've always said, for that to happen, there needs to be someone in the community who wants to take up that on concept and like champion it, and be a pest, basically, get it to happen.
We did have one of the farmers in the community trying hard to get them to do that at one stage, and they just didn't want to know. So,
because who have you got to talk to now? Because you're talking about a time when you were on a committee that specifically looked after Wainui Reserve. And as we said before, they got absorbed into the Coastal Reserves Committee, which then got culled by the former mayor yeah. Because the committee was misbehaving, which they were, by all accounts. There was bad behaviour on it, but
he didn't like, yep.
Well, no, by all accounts, bad behaviour from some of the committee members. Like, it was really quite blatant. But that's a different approach.
That's relative.
That's a different.
I was on the committee and I wasn't part of that spat.
Well, yeah, John wasn't being shouting at people. Where are we going with that? Yeah.
We were talking about how the council might set an example on the Wainui Reserve.
There's probably no one.
Emissions.
It's probably almost impossible to get council to do that without. Because that would require putting a lot of work on the plate of a council staff member, whereas previously the work would have been handled by the committee that oversaw Wainui Reserve. So I think there's a structural impediment there because of the way it's run now.
Yeah, because they've got rid of that committee and they no longer have that advice from people who might, well, in this community I know two people who are well qualified to give it. So
yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's unfortunate. That's just the council's it's bureaucracy's instinct. I'm not even going to point the finger at any person or even our actual council. It's just how bureaucracy works. It keeps pulling power into itself because it's easier to run without us being involved.
We might get round to discussing the Ombudsman's report at some stage. But
we might.
We're still
talking
about sustainability at the moment. Yeah.
Can I jump back a bit, because Craig, who's on the board of Raglan Naturally, has texted me to say that job title was Community Wellbeing Connector. See, I knew I was mangling it. And the person whose job it was Lara Sweeman. I say was because the funding's run out for that, but I think they're doing something to keep another source of funding or something. I'm not sure. He'll probably text me next about that. But yeah, that was Lara Sweeman. And he also wants to mention the Hauora Hikoi coming up on Saturday. That's basically a mental health, maybe suicide awareness thing. The poster's gone, Craig, from the studio at disappeared, so I can't say what that is. But we will be talking about that more later in the week, I promise. Back to you, John. Where are we at?
So I was just going through the list of things which are happening.
I know what I want to talk about. I want to talk about with you the bridge.
Which of the many bridges?
The one-lane bridge that people would like to be two-lane now. There's been people complaining at the community board meeting. There's been definitely problems on Labor weekends with the queues all the way back into town. If it's just one weekend, maybe we say, okay, that's the weekend and it doesn't matter. This is something I've known. There was a time when 2023 was the year that we were going to double-lane the bridge, and that was put into the long-term plan maybe 10 years ago, but they keep putting it in. To explain the long-term plan, John, is the council spending plan. They review it every 3 years.
It's a 10-year plan.
It's a 10-year plan, so they've budgeted for every 10 years, but if it's not put into the next 3 years, it's kind of in this limbo land in the distance, saying it's clearly a council priority, but not that they want to do it one day.
And it goes back 3 years, every 3 years.
That's basically what's happened, yeah. Because like I say, 10 years ago, they said it was going to be 2023 that they would be double-laning the bridge.
It's now 2030 or 31, I've forgotten which.
Yeah, so it's definitely not going to be put in the next 3 years. Lisa just confirmed that earlier this morning. So of course, there's questions about... They're talking about putting a road through to the back of Rangitahi, in which case...
At the same time.
Well, we might not need to double lane the bridge if they're going to do that.
Well, it's going to be a belt and braces job, but until then we haven't got any belt or braces.
Who says that?
That's also in the long-term plan.
Oh, okay. They're also working on... Now, Lisa mentioned that also council are putting a report together about transport network for Whangaroa.
Okay, and they're about to see that. Which is in the list of things to do. So
yeah, so they're going to be seeing that soon. It's just
what it's called in the sustainability agenda is increased multimodal connectivity. So I think what you've just said covers that.
Transport net, multimodal
connectivity.
What the heck?
How's that for jargon?
I mean, I have a university degree, but that's too much for me, man.
That's how I translate it.
Yeah, thank you for
what you've just said.
You have a university degree, and you're good at bureaucratic stuff, but or reading it, but either that's too much for you as well. I guess, what was it? Multimodal connectivity?
Yes. It's one for you to trot out frequently.
Modal? Not nodal, modal with an
modal,
E.
Modal, yes.
Modal.
As in modes of transport.
Okay, walking, biking, cars, bus.
Yeah.
Yeah, transport, okay. Okay.
This is a council report. It's not a... it is proposed to be a public document. So once the sustainability committee has approved it tomorrow, which they probably will, unless they change phrases like that, it's going to be a public document.
So
one of the aims of the council is to use plain English, but sometimes things like this come out of it. Support waste minimisation initiatives, so that's one that we keep hearing, particularly from Extreme, and climate action embedded in organisation, sustainable procurement, and a green building guide, and community climate education. So all those are in, and they're also talking about working with the community next year to identify needs and co-design a climate action plan for the community. So the one they're doing at the moment's for the council, and then they'll do one for the community next year, which, as I say, is one way of putting off for something which they would really like to put in the too hard basket.
Climate action plan. But putting it off for a year by council, that's like putting it off till next week for us, though.
Yes.
That's,
it does mean that they've got it in their list of things to do, so hopefully it's going to happen, and it's just a long time coming.
And to be fair to council, there's a lot of requests for things that must be done from all around the place, and they can't all be done, unfortunately. It's a real issue at the moment.
Yeah, and there are different forces. So we just talked about the single lane bridge, and the main aim of widening the single lane bridge would be to get more cars using it and to get more cars putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So,
and also,
look at it two ways.
The other thing I was thinking about too is when they two lane it, is that what inevitably happens when they double lane things or increase transport capacity is cars seem to come from nowhere and fill it up, because what's happening is people have been avoiding their area. And that's usually what happens. Like, we know now as locals that there's certain weekends where it's not worth trying to get over the bridge unless you go at a, you know, early in the day. And you might not, you might go to the supermarket early in the day when there's lots of people around as well, so you can get a park and all that kind of thing. And there are also people asking the question, how many people, how many visitors do we want in Raglan? Have we got too many? As long as I've been here, people have been saying we need more, make the business community more sustainable.
Well, that's why some more of visitors. Us are saying we need a long, a structure plan.
But is the structure plan really going to talk about that?
Well, it should do. It should look at whether the structure is up to coping with the number of visitors.
Oh, I see. Okay. But it doesn't ask the question that we as a community should be asking, is how many people is too many people?
Well, it would also then look at if the structure can't cope with the number of people and it costs too much or it's too environmentally damaging or whatever, then how do you restrict the number of people? How do you deal with them?
Well, the way you restrict the people is you don't upgrade your roading network. So it just becomes a people are like, I'm not going to Raglan. I can never move out there.
Yeah, which is why we need a structure plan to make that decision rather than do ad hoc ones like the single lane bridge.
But if the council, if the community has in our community value system, the things that we value is that we don't become Bondi Beach or, you know, Mount Maunganui, that kind of place, or even Botany Bay. Is that the one that's meant to be like Raglan's future? If our community values are that we don't want to be that, what's the thing that's going to stop people, too many people coming here? And the only thing I can think of is if they have a bad enough experience that they don't come back. Like, I'm being kind of just cold-hearted logic here, right? That's if people are like, oh, I'm not going to Raglan again. Otherwise, you know, we have to face the fact that we might feel continue to feel overrun if we keep making it easy for
well, one of the things that people to come may be coming up even under a national government is looking at congestion charging, which would be a very sensible way of discouraging people from using anything at peak periods.
But when congestion, we don't have that kind of congestion. That's Auckland City, Wellington's motorways, right? That's
well, we do at particular, as you say, at particular weekends.
Yeah, but people in Auckland are going to, anyone from Auckland listening to me now will be laughing at the idea, like, oh my God, you had a queue of traffic like a kilometre long. Is that all? Like, you know, we're not going to be taken seriously, John. We just don't like how it's changing the vibe of the town.
Well, you can also introduce parking charges. That's another thing which would be controversial, but it would reduce the incentive of people, because anything that's free, people use. If it's not free, then people think, oh, is it worth using it, or is it worth walking or getting on my bike, or eventually we might even have a bus to choose from.
Yes, we might.
We talked about that a couple of weeks ago, and whether we might get it not this summer, but the next summer.
It's definitely not getting it this summer, and no one knows why the Regional Council hasn't been able to do what they needed to do to get us the internal bus in Raglan for this summer. Lisa surmised that they might be short-staffed as well, or under-resourced.
Which is maybe it's down as a multimodal choice for next year.
John, stop using that phrase. I'm going to ban it.
Well, people might learn it eventually, because it does get used fairly frequently by planners, but it shouldn't find its way into ordinary documents.
Multimodal connector. Connection.
Connectivity, yes.
Connectivity. Yeah, it's a goodie.
Whilst we're talking about the sustainability plan, one of my concerns is that it talks about cutting emissions, which is great, but it also talks about cutting emissions by up to, what's the figure now? I've lost
25%, aiming for a district-wide reduction in emissions of 25% by 2030, so that's in 7 years.
Yep.
Are they going to do that?
Well, it says up to, which means it could be 0.5% or it could be the whole lot. So,
yeah.
And I'm hoping that tomorrow somebody might say, hey, why has it got these two words in there saying up to? Because it makes all the difference in that sentence as to whether they actually commit themselves to doing something or whether they commit themselves to buying an electric car each year or something.
But is the idea that we, in the Waikato district, that we reduce our emissions by 25% within 7 years? That's not going. There's no way that it will ever happen.
Well, that's why it says up to.
Yeah, like yeah.
It gets around it. It looks good, but then you read those two words, and it's not as good as it looks.
Yeah, I'd like to think it would happen, but
it's perfectly feasible, and we could do it without losing most of the things that people value. But it's a matter of deciding to do it. And
well, it's only feasible if you drastically change your economy.
Not necessarily.
Well, no, that is...
You can farm different things, which is why I would like the Winery Reserve to be a model farm for how you can be a profitable farm without cattle.
Yeah. Or regenerative farming. I keep throwing that in there. Either or. Something. Something.
Try without the current system. Yeah.
Please try something. Yeah, but that's... Oh, that's... Yeah, okay. I mean, it's just... I guess they have to put something in to show intent, but I just... Like you say, technically it's easy. John says this is easy. We could do this quite easily. Technically, yes. But as soon as you do things that messes with people's incomes, you meet a lot of resistance, which has always been the issue.
Because there is an encouraging figure in there which says that the district emissions are down by 8.2% compared with 2018-19. This is the 2022 figure. So it might still be affected by COVID. I'm not sure. So it'd be interesting to see whether we get the same trend next year or whether that was just the effect of COVID.
Is that gross output of emissions?
I don't know. They don't explain where they've got their measurement from. But
Because the population...
8.2% was quite a promising figure.
I can't understand how that's happened because that's not happening like nationwide, is it?
A very small decrease, yeah.
We've slowed down.
So we increased the amount of traffic and we decreased the amount of agricultural emissions, and overall they almost offset each other. So at national level, yeah, there's very little change, certainly not 8.2%.
Yeah, like I don't want to be too negative because people are trying things and we have, like we were accelerating dangerously off into the future, and that kind of dangerous acceleration of greenhouse gases has been slowed up. But I'd be surprised, if the whole country was overall down by 8%.
They also give the overall figures, which shows agriculture is way above anything else in terms of emissions. So 1.7 million tonnes of carbon equivalent from agriculture, as compared with less than 500,000 from other energy uses, and just over a quarter of a million from transport. So that gives the sort of balances to where the problem is. And yet the one of my criticisms of this sustainability plan is that it doesn't actually address even the council's agricultural emissions, and certainly not those outside council.
This is the hard thing. Should we move on before I just...
Let's have a look at what the strategy committee was doing a week ago.
Keep sighing.
So they've come up with something called Building Community Resilience and Connectivity, and saying we will prioritise the well-being of our district by building and supporting strong and resilient communities, which are easy to explore, and communities are connected and well-informed, and saying that the Te Kauwhata Community Response Plan was used as a pilot and has been completed, and Raglan is nearing completion. So, again, this is another one that rather like Raglan Natural, they have not heard what's going on.
Is that the actual community resilience, building community resilience and connectivity? That's the Civil Defence Plan.
Is it? Okay.
I think that must be, because it says the word resilience is the key there.
We've got this
apparently
secret meeting on Civil Defence coming up.
Don't stop that, John.
do we want to have that discussion?
John and I are having an argument. Well, there's a background to it, which is, so what's happened is that the Ombudsman, who said that councils have been too secretive about their workshops. Is that the background?
Yes.
Yeah, and I agree with that. Like, if you've got a situation where the council sits down in a workshop to discuss a new bylaw or a review in a bylaw or something like that, and the staff come along and present their information, and there's a lot of discussion, and then they kind of make their decision there, and then when they go to the full council meeting where the public are, they just say, they just vote. All they do is vote. That's how it happens, isn't it, John? So the minister at the time...
This is a quote from the Ombudsman, who's quoting a minister.
Deliberately secretive in its actions to an extent which is not in keeping with the spirit of the legislation. This is particularly of concern where the informal gathering happens to consist of all the elected members of a local authority with senior officers also present. So that's the kind of workshop I described. So who said that?
This is one of the ministers being quoted by the Ombudsman, who's just produced a report saying councils shouldn't have meetings like that.
Yeah, so John's calling the Civil Defence meeting a secret workshop, but I'm not, because it's not a workshop with all the council members there and some of the staff. this is different. This is a community meeting.
Well, part of a community, yeah, a selected part of a community.
Yeah.
Which includes people like you and me. But
yeah, and the thing is, they have been saying, like at many interviews here on the air, Lisa and Dennis have both said, if this is our community board chairperson and a councillor, if there's anyone who wants to be seriously involved with civil defence preparation in the community, to talk to them. And so there's been lots of time for people who want to be involved to get involved. And there will be, also talking to Lisa off the air today,
Presumably why we've been invited, so yeah.
Yeah, well, I run the radio station, so I think I have to be involved.
Well, it concerns me that there are people running things that they don't necessarily know about because they're not clear in the community, and yet there's some people I can think of, as far as I know, they're not invited to the meeting. Well, in fact, I'm sure they're not invited to the meeting because I've seen the invitation list, and they're not on that list, and it seems to me that they should be. And well, if they publicise it as a public meeting, they might likely get those people along, but they're missing out, and I don't see the advantages of having what I'm calling a secret meeting.
Well, they obviously do. Like, they've got things that they want to
achieve. Yeah, maybe we'll find out.
Yeah.
And maybe, as I say, they're going to tell us that there's some impending disaster that's coming and we need to break it to people without creating panic.
No, they just want to get some work done. And look, we've got to give some credit here. Like, This thing, I've been watching for 10 years as council tries to put together a civil defence plan for our community, ever since the Christchurch earthquakes, and I've seen council staff pulled out and hauled over the hot coals by Linda Cole when she was the chair of the, and it looked pretty rough. It didn't have any effect. I've seen staff members come and go and nothing's happened. Finally, with Dennis and Lisa, I think Ross Wallace involved, they actually have got, and a staff member dude whose name is Scott, I think, they have actually got to this point where they can now start talking to community members about who's going to be the person. Are you going to be the point person for this issue, always available in an emergency to do this? So that's kind of what this meeting is about.
Yeah,
as far as I can tell.
Maybe we'll find out when we go to the meeting why it needs to be secret, but as far
it's
as
not
I can
yet.
See,
secret
it,
is
it doesn't.
I keep telling John this, it's calling it secret is mischaracterizing it, because it implies that they're up to something, and I know they're not.
Well, that's not what the ombudsman's saying. He's just saying there's a perception.
See, this is where John and I disagree, because he's talking about what I was talking about, which is a workshop where all the councillors are there and staff, and they're discussing. I talk about a bylaw, right? Uh-huh. So they do all their discussion there, and they actually make their decision there, and then they go to the actual formal council meeting and just vote yes, basically, and there's no discussion. And what is the public meeting? There's no discussion for the public to be part to observe.
We'll be better informed on this in a couple of weeks' time when we've actually been to the meeting and seen why it's secret.
It's John. I'm going to slap you, man. Shall we move on? What have we got next?
That was the strategy meeting. Oh, they're also looking at the general rate position, and I thought there was an interesting idea that they're going to get the council's legal counsel along, spelt in a different way, two different councils, to advise on clarification on carry forwards for the long-term plan, so, and for the council's financing. So I'm not quite sure what's the implications are there.
What's a carry forward?
Every year they have projects which they plan and then they don't get round to doing, and in particular I'm thinking of the 3 years funding for the bus, which they didn't spend during those 3 years, but we had an assurance at the last community board meeting that money was being carried forward.
That was by the chief financial officer,
yes,
so that's probably reliable.
Well, except she's inviting the legal counsel along to say whether they can do that, so that there may be some backtracking on that.
Yeah,
I'm just highlighting it. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
Somebody's carry forward is not going to be carried forward, I suspect. And in fact, I almost guarantee that. And they might say, oh, no, we've got bigger priorities now. Cyclone Gabrielle has caused us to see that we need to do more resilience planning or build more resilient roads and bridges. And that's more important than a summer bus for Raglan.
And there's also...
not that it's all going to just be for summer, but...
There's also a quote that says, conversation to be had offline with the committee and the chief financial officer in relation to all committees and payments made by council. So we seem to hear very little again about our town hall committee. So whether that's something that's going to affect their spending. Also, we've got a report on earthquake proofing and pinching the money for earthquake proofing to spend on raising the beacons. So I don't know if we talk about that now or leave it until we get down to it on my agenda.
Well, we've got like 5 minutes left, so maybe we do talk about that now, because I would have thought, like, because we've seen a budget, haven't we? Like, a sum of money budgeted could be $500,000 for earthquake proofing the town hall, which I'm kind of sitting here right beside where there's some very heavy concrete parapet walls above us. I'm kind of keen on that myself.
Yeah.
I know that's, I might have a conflict of, you might call that a conflict of interest, but I'd be surprised. But there's a wider issue that the government has said that old buildings need to eventually be brought up to a certain standard. And are they actually going to shift the money from that to the beacons?
Well, that's what it says, yes.
$500,000?
Well, they've decided that they need an extra $250,000 to spend on the beacon, and so far they've got $136,000, so they need $120,000 extra to spend on the beacon, which amazes me that a beacon can cost that much.
When we say beacon, what is it, John?
Well, it's the thing that's next to Long Street. If you've ever been down Long Street and looked as you're going downhill on the right-hand side, there's a sort of big white beacon up some small flight of steps.
It's a visual thing.
Yes.
Yeah, so when you, for those who don't go out on boats past the bar, there's a couple of them, or two or three of them.
Three of them. You get three in a line and you know you're coming in the right place over the bar.
Yeah. I want to ask the question, what happens if one of them is out of line?
That's why they're not.
That means someone shifted it. Anyway,
that's why they want all three to be visible.
Are they just old and need replacing? Like,
well, no. They say that a resident approached council through the district plan consultation to discuss extending their property, which would include adding another level. If the property level was to rise, the existing beacon would be obscured.
Well, they just can't.
So they're spending all this money so that one person can enlarge their house, as far as I can make out.
Well, previously it's been the rule, you just can't. And when they put, there was a cell phone tower that went in downtown a few years ago, and that actually had to be lowered because it was obstructing the beacon.
That was my understanding. But then it goes on to say, council resolved in 2021 that the costs would be covered by the district, by the council. Now, why they decided that, I don't know. It's not a decision that I noticed being taken, so it's probably one of the public excluded meetings. And my guess is that they were being threatened with court action, and that they decided it was cheaper to pay for raising the beacon than it was to actually defend their sightline rule in the district plan.
Yes, but we don't know
but we don't know that, do we?
For sure, we can't say for sure, because I'm thinking, okay, what's the address? Who's the person? But we can't say that because we don't know for sure, and then we're in the gun as well, aren't we?
There can't be too many, because you need to look at that sight line and work out what buildings there are.
Which is it the one on Long Street?
And especially when it does change, you'll see which building is going up two stories.
Is it the one on Long Street?
I don't know. It doesn't say. Well, there's a beacon on Long Street, so there's a beacon on Long Street. There's one next to the police station, and there's one next to the bunker down on the beach, the pillbox.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously, no one's building there. It's probably Long Street.
Yeah.
Because you'd have to be in front of it, and it's hard to be in front of it.
Somewhere between the police station and Long Street.
Oh, okay. The hill is reasonably steep on Long Street. Would it have to be like the house over the road from it?
Yeah. It just concerns me that these sort of decisions are being made and hundreds of thousands of dollars are being spent and nobody has any say over it.
And ultimately, the parapet wall might fall on my head in the town hall because of it.
Yes, well, they do cover that and say that it will be, what percentage of safety? It's certainly not fully earthquake proof.
No, they don't have to. They don't have to be like a modern building, but they do have to be better.
They say it will reach the government's required level. So to that extent, you can blame the government if the beam falls on your head.
It's not a beam, John. It's a big lump of concrete.
Well, they're talking about strengthening one of the beams, so that's what they want $70,000 to do.
Ah, well, that'll be in the main hall.
They say on the east, so I've not actually looked at my geography to work out which way around we are.
Well, that's north that way, so it's this side.
Okay, so it's the beam that we're sitting under at the moment.
No, I don't think so, because I feel like it would be in the main hall. Where is it? I need to read that.
This is in the, if people want to look at it, have a look at the 24th of October council meeting. They had a special council meeting to talk about changing some of the priorities, and a large part of it was talking about the Papahua joint management plan. So they're agreeing to go ahead with that, which is no surprise.
Yeah, yeah, given the intention to return that land.
Yeah, so most of that agenda is about that, but then you get to the end of that and you come to this bit about earthquakes and beacons and also spending money. So some of the money from the town hall is going to the Huntley Pool because they're changing over from gas heating to electric heating for that, and apparently that's costing more than they reckoned as well.
Everything costs more than you reckon these days.
Yeah, one of the concerning things for me in this report is that it says the project was not well understood.
Who by?
Presumably council.
I'm a little confused by that.
This is presumably a current officer criticising a previous one.
Oh, okay. Well, that could happen. I just want to go back to the beacon. Like, if they have to raise the beacon higher, who's behind the beacon? Is someone going to lose their view because the beacon will be higher?
Possibly, but there's no rule against that. And I've said for a long time that there should be a rule against losing your view, but because it can well cost you $100,000 or more on your house price. But
does the person behind the beacon know that that's going to be happening to them?
Maybe they want to appeal the district plan as well.
Yeah, or just go and have a knock on the door with their neighbour and have a chat.
Yes.
I feel we should follow that up.
This is why these things ought to be in the open and not held in secret.
Well, but that wasn't really... it's not a secret, though, is it? Because we've got it.
Well, it was a secret at the time they decided they were going to fund it, for whatever reason, which we still don't know.
This is from the... what meeting?
Well, this is the whole council that was meeting on 24th of October.
So they've basically approved to do this.
I've not seen the minutes yet. My guess is they usually approve whatever's recommended.
Yeah. The council meeting is often a sort of rubber stamp exercise. No, I shouldn't say that because I'm never there, but sometimes.
And another mystery is that regional council's having an emergency meeting to talk about its annual plan, and I can't see anything in that agenda that says why it needs to be an emergency meeting, but presumably somebody forgot about it and decided that there was a deadline and it needed to be done.
Is the word emergency or extraordinary, John?
I think it's emergency meeting, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it could be. I mean, they have to call, if it's not a normal meeting, they have to give it a fancy name, so that's all that might be. John's shown me. I'll look at that later. We're out of time, John. We're out of time.
No, there's a surprising amount to cover this week, so hopefully we can cover some of it in more detail maybe in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, especially that beacon one's interesting, isn't it?
And I'll talk about it this evening on my show as well.
So, yes, yeah. John's on the air at 6, folks. He'll give you more detail than we've given here on some of these things. All the details. Thanks for coming in, John.
Thank you.
All right, folks, end of the show for the day. I hope you've enjoyed it. My plan is to be back again tomorrow morning.